Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities
and bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Yeah. Kihora, assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. This is Rosario Radio brought to you by ARCC Planet FM 104.6. This broadcast is brought to you live, and I'm your host for the day, Galuak Shola. I will be taking you for this 1 hour show. Singing in the background is Lucky Dube, a South African artist. And a known artist all over South Africa and Africa. Welcome to our viewers online. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for following us online. To those who are outside New Zealand, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming in. If you have any question, please drop a few lines on our Facebook and online. Some of you might wonder why I was off air last Saturday and I did not come in. Why? Because of some issues that happened. It's very shocking. You can see, you can hear my voice, the tune of my voice has changed. So here in Auckland, the South Sudanese community in Auckland were struck by unfortunate incident that happened. One of their community member by the name Tabitha Akech, sorry to the families who might not be aware of what happened. Tabitha Akech, a South Sudanese community member here in Auckland, passed away on Friday, the 8th of November 2019 at her home in GI. The community is grieving, thanks to the friends who have come to visit the family. Thanks to all the Kiwis who have had to help at this difficult time. This has not only struck the family of Akech, also the families of South Sudanese community and the Kiwis at large. This is something that we never knew how it happened, but she passed away in her home. She was not sick, but it happened. But the police ruled out there's no criminal activity to that. So please, if you want to see the family, if you are from Rosario community or a Kiwi who cares about anything like this, You do not need to know the person, but this is what happened. She left two kids, 11-year-old boy and 9-year-old daughter. They are in the care of immediate family members, uncles and aunties, and they live at Glen Innes. If you want to pay them a visit, you can, yes, the address is 5 Marino Place at Glen Innes here in Auckland. So this is what happened. It's very tragic. No one would expect that it would happen, but it happened the way it happened. We don't control our lives. So the Creator control our lives. So He decides to take her at that age, at the age of 30, 34, 35. And that's what happened. All we need to do is to stand in solidarity with the family. Thank you. Thank you for this. It's a very difficult time for me as a person who has known her for some time since I came to New Zealand about 4 years ago. And it's so hard. It's so hard. So let me play some song here and we'll come back. We'll talk about other things. Rest in peace, Akech. This is for you.
I don't usually get on bad, but when I do, I'm listening to
Get Shot Up. Sound up on rhythm, lick down flat up. Nothing more than lick down flat. Jungle man, spangler, my man did hot up. And the uptown, man, them did hot up. And the river town, man, them run hot up. Firehouse, mall, road did hot up. And the field land, man, them hot up. And my bush, man. Man, them did at.
Welcome back. That's Brenda Fassie from South Africa singing Nakupenda. That means I love you. We love you, Akech. For those who have just tuned in, we have sad news in South Sudanese community here in Auckland. One of our sisters by the name Tabitha Akech passed on last week. And sorry to the family members who might not be aware of this, especially those who are overseas. This is what happened. And this is a time of grief, and African communities are being hit by this. A lot of things happen here in Auckland. We don't know how to go about this, but, you know, rest in peace. And if you need to comfort and console the family, you are highly welcome. They are located at the address 5 Marino Place at Glen Innes here in Auckland. And you can pop in and, you know, see the kids, because she left two kids behind. Yeah, we let's move on. You know, when you are a new person in a country, sometimes you know what to do, sometimes you don't know what to do, sometimes you just look and watch how things go. It happens to so many people who are new in the country. It's a new country with different lifestyle, new culture, and this is what happens when people come here from different journeys of life. They can be migrants, they can be visitors, they can be anybody who is new, not from here. When I say not from here, I mean not born here. and they are just new here. So there are a lot of things that go on, and one important thing that has caught my eyes is how, you know, is stereotyping and inclusivity and diversity and all this play in. So one of the guys who has spoken very well about trying to identify what you access is not what makes you inclusive, you know. And he was talking about his experience in the college. I think the guy is from the U.S. I don't know which state he comes from, but I got the video here. I will play it to you. So he's talking about his experience in the college and how diversity, you know, is very important in our lives. And when you get welcome, even in the college, we all went through this. You can get welcome, a very warm welcome, but tomorrow things might change in the way you did not expect. And so, according to him, he's saying accessibility of the things you need does not necessarily mean you are included. It does not mean inclusive. So inclusivity is a totally different thing as his view. And then why don't we go ahead and listen to his concern here and what he's talking about, and then later we will go through some of the things he would be trying to tell us. Because this video is about 12 minutes long, it's not very long, and we will come back and see, you know, talk about some of the things he said. Let me play it and we will talk about those.
I remember the first time I stepped foot on the Amherst College campus. It was with my mother and brother. We drove up from Miami. The flights were too expensive, and besides, we were all afraid of flying anyway. We pulled up to Pratt Dorm, got out of the car, took deep breaths of fresh country air, but then my brother starts to laugh. He saw a little critter run across the yard. He said, "Tony, y'all pay how much for school here and y'all got rats?" Y'all, it was a chipmunk. We had never seen a real one before. His joke barely hid his excitement. It did nothing for his nerves. We were in another world. So yeah, me, here, a Harvard professor in an opera house, is a testament to the fact that even undreamt dreams come true. I'm the proud son of a middle school security guard, the brother of a janitor. Both hardworking, but neither college educated. I'm from a poor, segregated community in Miami that even my local newspaper called a place time forgot. There are often more struggles than celebrations. High school was the finish line. When I was growing up, there were only three Ivy League schools, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. And the only reason why Princeton makes the list is because of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But such is the pernicious power of poverty. It isolates and it separates. It creates two worlds occupied by the haves and the have-nevers. So much so that people equate poor students like myself making it into college as having made it. The golden ticket, not to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but to those bastions of power and privilege. Yet getting in is only half the battle. Colleges, like many organizations, have invested millions in diversity recruitment, but have thought less about what to do when students arrive on campus. Access ain't inclusion. Part of the reason why is because colleges get their new diversity from old sources. My research is the first to show that colleges get half of their poor black students from boarding and day schools. One third of Latinos are too. I call these students the privileged poor. Colleges like poor students from private schools because they have cultural capital, those taken for granted ways of being that are valued in mainstream institutions. The other poor black and Latino students attend local, typically distressed public schools. they don't enter with the same cultural capital. I call these students the doubly disadvantaged. It was my interviews with 103 undergraduates that show how poverty and inequality stop those who made it. You see, when students enter college, whether a community college or an Ivy League institution, they encounter a hidden curriculum, a system of unwritten rules and unsaid expectation. Professors throw around class terms like office hours, yet they only say when they are. They never say what they are. You see, colleges expect students to be comfortable engaging faculty. I mean, this is the road to recommendation letters. It's the road to emotional support when times get rough. Connecting with faculty is even valuable for your GPA. One research project showed that each visit to office hours corresponds with a 1.25% bump in your final grade for that course. Yet, this expectation goes unsaid. There's no manuals of do's or don'ts, when's or how's. And unspoken, if undergraduates want something, they will come operates as the gold ticket, the college corollary to the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Imagine the culture shock then that the doubly disadvantaged experience. It was otherworldly for Valeria, a lower income student from the Midwest. Her teachers spent more time maintaining order than making connections. She entered college believing in the American dream. She believed that her advancement should be about the work. It was how her father saw the world. It was also how he told her to see it as well. Mija, you don't want to get ahead by kissing ass, right? You want it based on hard work. It'll take longer, mija, but you'll feel more proud. Let us not be quick to label this father's advice as bad. In 2016, a dean from Dean College reached out to me. She wanted to know how could she increase academic engagement among her lower income students. I said, let's start with something basic. Let's define office hours. Something I said resonated with her. When she finally asked her students why they didn't visit her in office hours, they said, Miss, we thought that was your time to do your work in your office undisturbed. It's a reasonable assumption to make. Something was lost in translation that had nothing to do with English proficiency. But let us remember the privileged poor. Those alumni of prep schools where contact with faculty is not only encouraged, but built into the structure of the place. Students like Agun. A reflective Latina, Agun hails from a troubled neighborhood, but attended a New England boarding school. She was taught in high school by PhDs. PhDs were also dorm parents. She entered college feeling entitled to talk to a professor and say, hey, I want to meet with you. My high school told me I can do that. It's actually my right. Even when her professor was away from campus, she had no qualms calling him for virtual office hours despite friends' surprised looks. Undergraduates from America's forgotten neighborhoods and ignored schools are truly disadvantaged if colleges continue to privilege privilege. We cannot assume that all students have had a chance to practice, let alone master these skills, before they arrive on campus. And as office hours in college become open door policies at work, this process, it can continue. We wonder why we can hire diverse applicants, but we can't seem to promote them. Recommendation letters in college are dependent upon relationships with faculty, just as promotion at work is dependent upon relationships with superiors. For me, I went to Gulliver Prep and learned how to navigate office hours similar to Agun. I got those letters of recommendation, one even coming from the college president. I learned that it's not just what you know and who you know, but also about who knows you and how well they do. But I am not so naive. The stumbling blocks to inclusion are not merely social. Colleges take for granted not just what students know, but also what they can afford. Sometimes the very policies that colleges implement hurt all lower income students, the privileged poor and the doubly disadvantaged alike. College's decision to shut down during spring break, assuming that all people can leave for fun in the sun, is a case in point. But what if you can't go home? Or what if you don't have a home to go to? Or what about for you if hurt and home are synonymous? Campus, for better or for worse, is your refuge. Yet professors flee and friends leave. Buildings close. They even turn down the heat in the dorms. You walk past the cafeteria and the lights are out and the chairs, they're stacked on top of the tables. You walk past the cafeteria and the lights are out. You literally can still, though, see the plates and trays, the forks and knives through the fence that bar you from entry. It comes as no surprise why poor students like Ariana call spring break the real Hunger Games. But just how close it comes to living in the districts is downright depressing. When campuses close, students combat food insecurity, not knowing where their next meal is coming from. Sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. You know, I attended a conference for first-generation college students, and I met a young woman. She was white, witty, and wore her hair in a pixie haircut. She had on a blue Columbia University sweatshirt. She stood brave in the room to discuss how she spent her last spring break at one of the most wealthiest colleges in the country. She increased her online dating activity the week before spring break to secure dates the following week. Banking on gender norms of older men paying for the first meal, she treated OkCupid as if it was DoorDash. She treated Tinder as if it was Grubhub. Outpriced and overextended, she offered her time. This makes no sense. But this is a reality for many students across the country. 2 out of every 5 undergraduates in America are food insecure. Instead of investing time learning linear algebra, many invest their times making ends meet. You know, the question of if diversity is worth it is ever present. And not just at colleges, but at organizations of all stripes. The answer is yes, it is. But we should not be surprised when certain new groups struggle. These unwritten rules and injurious hurdles don't just trip them up. It keeps them on the outs. We must move from access to inclusion. And data will help in this endeavor. I've shared with you just 2 issues that undercut diversity's efforts: the hidden curriculum and food insecurity. There are many more, both social and structural in nature. So I'll leave y'all with this. What else do we take for granted? Thank you.
I've been told about living like a star, ordering champagne and caviar, but no one ever showed me the reverse, and it really hurts, baby, it really hurts.
como si fuera la última vez. Y enséñame ese pasito que no sé. Un besito bien suavecito, bebé. Taqui, 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 rum. Enséñame ese pasito que no sé, un besito bien suavecito, bebé, taqui, 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 rumba.
Touch it and tease it and squeeze it with my piggyback. It's hungry, my nigga. You need to beat it. If the text ain't freaky, I don't wanna read it. And just to let you know, this Panani is undefeated. Ayy, he said he really wanna see me more. I said we should have a date where at the Lamborghini store. I'm kinda scary, hard to read. I'm like a wizard boy, but I'm a boss bitch. Who you gonna leave me for? You got no class, you bitches is broke still. I be talking cash shit while I'm popping my gold grill. I'm a whole rich bitch and I work like I'm broke still. The love be so fake, but the hate be so real. Sobresale de mi traje, no traje panticito pa' que el nene no trabaje. Es que yo me sé lo que tú crees que tú no sabes. Dice que no quiere, pero se quiere comerle el equipaje.
Báilame como si fuera la última vez. Y enséñame ese pasito que no sé. Un besito bien suavecito, bebé. Taqui, 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 rumba.
Body already know how to play, but work it, keep it tight every day. And I know you need a taste. Now ooh, falling in love, give a little ooh, get it well done. Dancing on my ooh, make a girl wanna run. We keep moving till the sun come up. Get high in the party, it's a fiesta. Blow out your candles, have a siesta. We can try, but don't know what can stop me. What my talkie talkie wants, get my talkie talkie good.
Báilame como si fuera la última vez. Y enséñame ese pasito que no sé. Un besito bien suavecito, bebé. Taqui, 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 rumba.
Married to the game, no prenup, no indoor, no retreat, no surrender till death do us apart. all day, every day. Person your topic, ndoto skyscrapers, passion ya hip hop, vile wa Kristo ana passion ya Christ. KB4 force, ukiwa na shida na una shida with the city. My MCs ni mabuli, but ukikama round wana ficha ficha chini ya ardhi kama mbuni. Siku wana dreadlocks, inamaanisha we ni hip hop. Brain activity, ulimi gymnastics. Hii art ina graph, nikifungulia tapu fuasi, nina knowledge ya mta. So siwezi lala nja, flow ni Al-Qaeda kwa corridors za White House.
So I'm above it, above it.
Take the notes, first thing I said, first time I met hip-hop, nilihisi nika nimezaliwa tena, kastafti pesa ni mistari mina tema, Afrika mizizi ya mziki, Afrika bidindo msingi wa riziki, mina hip-hop kwa faraja na kwa dhiki, hata nikiaga watasikiza kwa mazishi, hakuna kaa wewe milele ataishi, kuonyesha picha ya maisha, through you Bobby alipata sifa, I love hip-hop, siyezi mind wedding, mina hip-hop nika chupa na mlevi, future tamu kasa liya kibwezi, what's love? Love is what I feel for music. Always come through, even when we fuse it. K-Force, I always refuse it.
Hello, welcome back. If you have just joined us, you are listening to Rosario Radio, brought to you live by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. And this is a live broadcasting, always come to you from a live studio here in Auckland, every Saturday from 4:45 to 5:45 p.m. It's a very bright day today in Auckland, and shout out to you guys who are online following us on our page, and those who download the podcast, thank you. Thank you for all the support you have given us. I'm your host for the day, Galo Axel. I have been playing you some music, different music from different countries, different continents, and I will bring you more of those. Let's go back to the gentleman who talked before about the accessibility, not necessarily the inclusivity, and it's been telling the truth, because he's talking from the things he experienced. So the gentleman by the name Anthony Jack. Anthony Jack is a professor at Harvard University in the United States, and he went through a tough time as a child and got through a tough life, and he got all he experienced, and he everything he said before, he was relating it to himself, and because he lived that life. And when you live the toughest life, no one will tell you, hey, this life is tough, this life is this, because you know it all. You know it all better than anybody who did not go through that experience and that journey that you have gone through. So, Anthony, let's hear some thoughts here about him. He was saying a lot of good things here. And he said, you know, let's describe some of the words he said. He said, hidden curriculum. Hidden curriculum is those unwritten rules, according to him. He described that very passionately. Unwritten rules are hidden curriculum are the unwritten rules being hidden out there and in the campus. So if you are a new student, you will deal with them. They are nowhere. Just, you know, no, you cannot find them anywhere. But they say there are rules and they are not set out. No one could see them, but they will say them anyway. Why would they put that? Because it's what he described as diversity, accessibility is not inclusivity, because welcoming someone to the campus is one thing, but including that person is another thing. He talked about the history of a girl who went through a tough time, and two girls, actually. One of them is from a wealthy background. She comes to the campus. She knows what she's doing. She's not going to bed without food, because she got enough food, and she would even, you know, whatever she wants is always there, because she is having some money. But one of the guys, he was talking about, maybe he was referring to himself, that he did not even have home. When the school is closed, when the college is closed, he could not go anywhere, you know, just in the darkness, and the college would be, by the time the college closed, that person would not go anywhere. So he was talking on behalf of those students who did not have any home to go to. And this can be related to a lot of us who came from different places, because there's one time in, you know, in life where you would have no even where to sleep. And this is what a lot of us who have been from the refugee journey before we got here has been some sort of an experience and tormenting experience. So Anthony was telling us what he experienced be as a son of a janitor from Miami. He did not have enough, and he managed to go to Harvard and be a professor there. Something we never know it would happen, and it happens. So whatever Anthony Jack talked about, I think I related with the unconscious bias. To me, unconscious bias, I hear that a lot, but when I hear that, you know, people speak nowadays, hey, racism is bad, you know, bias practices are not welcome, and let's do this, let's do that. But you will find that those people who are speaking those words, the people practicing what is not right. And it tells me, you know, people are not very honest to themselves. I'm not saying there are not good people out there. A lot of people out there, a lot of good people out there. But there are people who have gone through those journeys where you find the gatekeepers along the road. You know, they tell you, "Oh, you should not do this in a certain way." So how does it go down with unconscious bias? So I'm thinking about Gail Tolstoy Miller is one of the good speakers here, and I got one. I listen to a lot of her videos and a lot of her speeches, but there's one particular speech of her own speech that has caught me by surprise, because it came from inside, you know, it came from her heart. And she was talking about unconscious bias as a stereotypical hiring practices. You know, when you get hired, you will not be hired while you have the qualities needed by that job, and yet you will not be taken. Why? Because there are those, she described, unconscious bias. I think I can take her through speech a little bit and see if we can get anything out of it. Our time is coming to an end as well. We have 41 minutes, and we might not go there far. But let's have a 1 or 2 minutes and see how it goes. And we will come back.
Now, I'm sure most of you have not gotten a job and wondered why. Well, the real reason may surprise you, and it may also surprise the people that are making the decision as well. Now, research has suggested that we are actually bombarded with 11 million pieces of information at any given time, but we can only handle 40. So our brain creates shortcuts so we can make decisions quickly without overwhelm. But this creates bias that we're unaware of, known as unconscious bias. Now, I think when most of us think about bias, we think about the typical, right? Race, age, gender. But what about the not so obvious? The kind of things we don't discuss. The kind of thing that maybe will shock you. The kind of thing that'll make the difference between your resume going in the yes or no pile. I'm a recruiter and a career coach. And a couple years ago, I interviewed an amazing candidate, an absolute star. And I thought for sure she would get the job. But it didn't happen. So obviously I asked the hiring manager, you know, why didn't you hire this candidate? And this is what she said. I can't quite put my finger on it. It's just a gut feeling I have. Oh boy, I knew there was trouble. Then she said, did you notice her white pumps? You don't wear white pumps after Labor Day. And then I said, oh, I never got the corporate memo on that one. Sorry. But her beliefs and judgments were so strong about wearing white pumps after Labor Day that it actually distracted her, believe it or not, from properly assessing the candidate and her accomplishments. This wasn't a conscious decision, but a conscious one. So I've reviewed probably over a million resumes in my career. And let me tell you, every single detail of your resume, not including your skills, can be a deciding factor in whether you go in the yes or the no pile. Okay, so a mailing address indicates a long commute or undesirable location could put you in the no. An email address, such as crazymom666, can put you in the no. I'm not one of those. Even a reputable college, such as Indiana University, can be perceived as not a pedigree school by some. Guess what? I just put Mark Cuban in the no pile. And that's not all. Some recruiters will do a social media investigation on you. Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, you name it, the list goes on and on. And nothing is private. Any information that they see can be used against you and put you in the no pile. A Facebook picture of you drunk at a party puts you in the no. A stay-at-home dad who's perceived as lazy, wanting to return to the workforce. Or that political tweet that doesn't quite agree with the recruiter can easily put you in the no.
Welcome back. This is Gunwar Chul. We are approaching the end of our airtime, and we will continue next time from where Gail stops, and she's talking about unconscious bias. It's something which is really very good to listen to, and sorry that we do not have enough time to listen to her speech. She's talking from her heart, and because she interviewed that person in person and it did not go down well with her. And this is something she has taken seriously. Why we don't need unconscious bias? Because it does not need to be in our society, and we should be an inclusive-minded people, just like what was said by Anthony Jack. And with that, we will come back again next Saturday, same time, same place. And please have a beautiful week. I will leave you with some music from Somalia.
This week.
Take care until next Saturday, same time, 10 to 5, on Planet FM 104.6.
And on the web, www.plantaudio.org.nz/resetter radio.